Behold the voice of God.
For those of you who don't know me officially, my name is Amanda Waller.
And I am Aaron Mosh, host of Task Force X.
What, are we some kind of suicide squad?
Well, yeah, that and...
Checkmate.
Task Force X is a podcast that tells the stories of John Ostrander's Suicide Squad and Paul Kupperberg's Checkmate from the late 80s, early 90s.
I want to build a team of some bad people who can do some good.
And that's what Suicide Squad is. While Checkmate is a team of good people doing some good, my mission here is to chronicle each and every title in all the books that Suicide Squad and Checkmate appeared in during that era.
We're the U.S. government. You're going to start a blog and expose us?
Well, a blog and a headcast, Amanda.
Those scumbags are trying to screw me.
Not at all, Amanda. Just trying to help everyone else discover the joy of the Suicide Squad and Checkmate. Anywho, hope you guys have as much fun with these comics as I did when I first read them. Oh, so many years ago.
Mother.
That's enough of that, Amanda. Let's go and start the show.
I didn't believe the stories.
Nobody does.
Remember, I'm watching.
I see everything.
Welcome back, Squad Mates. Brother Head here, bringing you episode 60 of Task Force X. Sorry for the delay from last month, but we are back. Hopefully we can get this worked out. But this month, we're going to look at Checkmate 30 and Suicide Squad 46. First up the bat, Checkmate 30. Cover date was August of 1990. On sale date, June the 26th of 1990. Cover price, $1.50. The title of this was called Nightbeat, written by the ever popular and wonderful Paul Kupperberg, penciled by the Steve Irwin. Inker was Michael Baer. Letterer, Johnny Mack. Colorist, Juliana Freder. Cover credits was Steve Irwin and Michael Baer. And the editor of this was Jonathan Peterson. So let's go ahead and dive into this issue. First up, we're going to look at the cover, as always. The cover of this, we have our two Checkmate Knights from last issue rounding a corner. One of them saying to the other, "Shh, keep quiet. We don't want them to know we're here yet." Meanwhile, around this corner they're going around, we've got three guns pointed at them by some unknown possible upcoming assailants. A great cover. I don't remember this one when I think of Checkmate, but now that I'm looking at it, it's great. We got a nice close-up of both of these Checkmate Knights. Again, their costumes are a little bit different than each other. I know originally, if I'm not mistaken, when this started, their costumes were very similar because, you know, you don't know who you're dealing with. They think it's one person. So it wasn't often at the beginning they teamed up. But we've got these two knights here teamed up. Again, I love the knight's costume. I love, and again, I forget which is which offhand, but I love the one in the foreground. It's a very classic Checkmate knight costume. The other one's got the vest, and he's got a yellow faceplate that's got just like a slit. Well, they both got slits. I don't know. It's just, his visor's different. It's got more of a, the top part of it's kind of angled upward and almost like horns or something, where the regular Checkmate knight's more rounded. I just enjoy the more original, in quotes, looking knight. But they're both great. I love Checkmate. I love the Knights. And Irwin and Baer did a fantastic job on this cover. We got the shadows in the background. We get some of the shadows from the unknown assailants. It's about ready to zap them. Very great future-looking zapper guns, I guess. One of them's got like a... We can see a wire coming out of the bottom of it going somewhere. Just very, very great cover. I just love the way this is drawn. And moving on to the story itself, we start out in New York City, where we have Bishop fighting our knights in the middle of the street. We got a very, first page, we get a very good close-up on Bishop. Behind him's like yellow and black, almost like it's on fire. We see the two knights in Bishop's visor. He's got a red visor, and reflected back, we see the two knights that he's attacking. He's got fire. It looks like fire. I'm not sure if it's fire or if it's a continuing blast of guns from his gauntlet. In fact, one we see smoking like it just got done firing off. Again, and then we get a splash page on the next for pages 2 and 3 of a tanker exploding and One of the knights knocking the other one down, knocking him out of the way of the exploding tanker. So this starts up moments, if not seconds, if not milliseconds after the last issue where Bishop showed up and he's like, surprise. So again, just a great, again, a great artwork in this. Steve Irwin does a fantastic job on the pencils. Mike Baer does inking fantastically. And even the colors, Juliana Freder. We can't forget Juliana. It's the art, the color in this book is just awesome. It's fantastic artwork between the drawing, the inking, the coloring. It's all fantastic. I love the truck exploding in the background. We get our title page here on page 3, part of the splash page, saying Night Beat. I love the font. They got the kind of the fancy writing for night, and then beats a little more chaotic, off-centered a little bit. It's fantastic. And here on the next page, we see the city. It's not destroyed, but there's a bunch of cop cars in the background watching what's going on. We got this tanker that's on fire. We got Bishop flying up in the air. Meanwhile, the two knights are on the ground, and we get what's his name? Winston telling Lionel that he's on fire, and apparently his vest caught fire from the explosion. The dialogue in this is fantastic. Paul does a wonderful job on the dialogue. He's like, good God, Lionel, you're burning, man. It's just my uniform. But I'd appreciate you pitting it out just the same before Bishop. And he's like, knights. And Lionel's like, uh-oh. It was, uh-oh, could you be a little more specific? Oh. And Bishop flies in and grabs Winston. Winston is in the more traditional knight costume, where Lionel is the one with the vest and the odd, in my opinion, looking mask. That's a nice mask, but it's a little odd looking compared to the traditional checkmate knight mask. So anyways, Bishop grabs Lionel, or Winston, keep on getting too confused. Winston picks him up and flies off in the air with him. And as he's flying off, Winston's like, whoa, Earl, you wouldn't want to talk about this, would you, Renard? Because, again, Bishop, as we discovered in previous issues, is Renard, a previous checkmate knight. We had that whole drama leading up to the reveal and his escape. And, again, just a great ongoing continuing story from Paul Kupperberg. Paul did a fantastic job on this book. But as he's flying away, like I say, so Winston's like, you know, we don't want to talk about this. And Bishop's not saying anything, or Renard isn't saying anything. So Winston's like, I guess not. And again, here at the bottom of page 4, and I love they got the page numbers numbered. I keep commenting on that, but it makes it much easier for us podcasters to talk about these books when the pages are numbered. I say, you know, look at page 4 and you see what I'm talking about, instead of, I think it's page 1, 2, 3, 4, you know. So anyways, enough about that. But again, a very nice shot. Even though it's not much to see, this tiny little, not tiny, but the smaller little corner panel here where we see the fire from Bishop's jet boots going up in the air, and just a little dot of Winston and Bishop, and where, and just the word bubble where Winston's saying, I guess not. And it looks like Bishop drops Winston, is what it looks like, and he's saying no as he drops him. And again, I love here where on page 5, where Winston's falling to the ground, and to save himself, he uses a grappling hook, I guess it is. He wraps around a flagpole and uses that to slow his descent. He catches the flagpole and he swings around, and as he's doing this, he's talking us through it. A lot of writers wouldn't do that. They would just show the action, but Paul goes out of the way here to let us know what's going on and explain why what happens happens. So he explains he's got to pull the line taut, make it smooth, catches momentum in an arc, swinging up to slow himself down, and then let go and pray slowed enough as he lands on a car. And he says he's hoping the padding of the suit will absorb the worst of the impact. The knights aren't your regular superhumans, aren't superheroes. They don't have any special powers. They've got the suits and their gadgets to protect them. They're kind of like Batman. And Again, here on page 5, where we see him swinging that arc before he lands on top of that car. I love what we show him in that motion as he swings around to his back and he flies it back up in the air and lands on top of the car. And I'm fine either way. If Paul hadn't written this information and described what was happening, I wouldn't have minded. But I do like that Paul actually, you know, steps us through step by step what's happening. The only, in quotes, problem with it is that it kind of takes away from the artwork. So we got these thought bubbles as he's doing all this, which is, it's got to go somewhere. So it interrupts art a little bit. And again, it's not that it's bad. It's just the art in this is so fantastic that while I enjoy the speech bubbles and him walking us through it, it makes it so we can't quite appreciate the art for just the art. So I want to complain. Again, it's a very minor nitpick. But as I've said before on some other shows, sometimes when you get these books that are so great, nitpicks are all you have. So instead of just gushing and saying Paul's the greatest, I will point out that, again, and that's not bad. I'm kind of going back and forth here myself because I like the way he worded it and he described what's happening. It just, it pulls a little away from the art. So, but otherwise, fantastic job here on this book. And as Winston's laying on top of the car, a cop comes up and he's like, "All right, freeze. What do you have an explanation for that?" And Lionel's, "We both do, actually, but there's no time to tell it." And they see Bishop circling back around. So the checkmate knights, they take the cop down to protect him as Bishop comes flying over and blasts the police car. And he's all, "Poor choice, knights, taking cover behind a dime bomb. Just waiting for my energy blast to ignite its fuel tanks." And so that describes earlier on the first couple pages when I wasn't quite sure if it was fire or bullets. It's energy blast coming out of his guns is what it is. And as he blows up the cop car, he scans and he doesn't find anybody, motion detectors or car sensors, doesn't find anything. So like most bad guys, he assumes they're dead until we cut down underneath and we show an open manhole grate. And one of the guys is saying, "Think he's gone?" And Winston's like, "Yeah, want to check?" And I guess it's the cop saying, "Think he's gone." Because Winston says, "Think you want to check?" And the cop's like, "No." As he's laying here while the two knights are, you know, one of them's holding the cop down so he doesn't do anything stupid. And the other one's looking up at the manhole cover. Just fantastic dialogue in this. And again, just it's a great action scene. And this starts off the book. The first 6 pages is just one long action sequence. So it's fantastic. Like I said before, they really should do a Checkmate TV series and get Paul in to write it, because Paul's got these dynamic action scenes he writes and he's got fantastic dialogue and he's got all this backstory stuff, which we'll be talking about a little more here in a few minutes. But I would really like, you know, a lot of comic books are coming to the TV now and movies, and as I've said elsewhere and before and probably here, this is a great time to be a geek. There's so much out there that if you don't like one thing, there's something else that's sure to get your attention. Speaking of Checkmate, there is the Peacemaker TV series. I don't like it. I think I've commented before how they play Peacemaker more of the comedic angle, which he isn't really a comedic actor, not a comedic actor, but a comedic character. So I don't care for that portion of it. And again, they have Vigilante in the show, and I really hate the way they do Vigilante. So it's not for me, but as I said, there's so much out there that I don't watch it. And yes, while I do miss it, I would love to watch a good Peacemaker show. There's so much other geeky stuff out there that I can pet it to the side and move on to something else. So if anyone from Hollywood's listening, get a hold of Paul Kupperberg and talk to him about writing a Checkmate TV series. An hour-long, 45-minute, hour-long TV series dealing with Checkmate. It'd be a fantastic show. Anyways, in the story, we go to Ostend, the capital city of the Republic of Ostenburg, where we get these guys sitting there talking, and apparently Victor Cipher, our bad guy of this storyline, wants to have some sort of title, a royal title. And these two guys in the government here is talking, It's Mr. the Secretary. And I'm not sure. The other guy's name's Heinrich. But he's like, are you sure this is necessary? I mean, these are the 1990s, for heaven's sake. Don't you find the entire idea more than just a little anachronistic? And Heinrich's like, actually, I quite agree with you, Mr. Secretary. But as you know, it's more of a gesture than anything else. He does have a verified lineage and claim to the title. And his decision opened a major industrial complex here in the Ostenburg. As I stutter that one out, is one of the primary reasons for the upturn in our country's economy. And the secretary's like, but bestowing royal titles? We're a modern democracy, after all. Oh, I suppose that's necessary to feed his ego. But I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. As he's signing over, that guy's name is William Van Dijk, the minister or whatever of this country. And so we're not quite sure what title he's getting at this point, but we do see on the paper he's signing, we do see that it is for Victor Cipher. And again, I can't read this language. I'm not sure what language it's written in, but so I can't quite see what it says, but if any of you guys can decipher whatever this is, please let me know. But moving on from there, we go back to Washington, D.C., where our friend Harry Stein is still... he's still in trouble for his decision to use Checkmate resources to free his sons. So he's still in front of the committee, the House committee, and at this point Steele is speaking up for him, talking about how, you know, Stein's a very valuable member of the service. He's you know, done everything he can. And again, who of us wouldn't have used whatever resources are necessary to get our family back? And again, like he says here, you know, if he hadn't done this, if he had taken the time to follow the rules, check the boxes, dot the I's, cross the T's and all this, his kids may be dead. And so it's a good man and still saying, you know, well, the intelligence community cannot afford to lose Stein. Because again, just he made a mistake, but like Sarge still says, it's a mistake almost any of us would have made. I know as a father, I've got four kids, five grandkids. I would have done, if I was in charge of the Checkmate and someone taking one of my kids or two of my kids even, I definitely would have used the full resources of Checkmate. In fact, I probably would have gone farther than Stein did to get my kids back. So maybe that's saying something more about me, but I don't know. But the senator he's talking to, Senator McCraven, very good name, McCraven, kind of like a craven coward. Anyways, he's going, you know, nor can the American people, Mr. Steele, afford a maverick at the head of one of our most powerful and secret agencies. The law is the law, sir. And if Mr. Stein is incapable of remembering that, he is not the man we want running Checkmate. It's getting late. We'll adjourn till tomorrow afternoon. And he clunk as they dismiss and as they leave. Still is talking to Stein, telling him, sorry, I've given everything I can. And I love here at the bottom of page 8, where we see, I'm not sure, I was going to say it was Stein at first, but actually looking at the color of his suit, I think it's Sarge Steele. He's got a hand, it's not a great, detail. I was going to say it's not a great drawing, but I think it's a great drawing. You can't really see because we're far away, but he's got his hand to his face, and you can just see the, not necessarily desperation, but the exaggeration, I guess he's in, or the turmoil he's in, knowing that Stein is going to be in deep doo-doo for what he did to save his kids. So, and meanwhile, we have, speaking of Stein, we've got Val following him, Valerie Vostok. And apparently he goes to the Lincoln Memorial every day while after he's done with the trial. He goes there and just sits or stands looking over Lincoln. And I love here, before I get to that, as he goes to the Lincoln Memorial and Val's talking to this one agent that's following him, or I don't know if he's an agent or what exact role he has. But, you know, the guy's like, I suppose, so what do you think the attraction here is for him? And Val's like, I think he must feel much in common right now, presiding over a house divided. And so we see Harry just standing in front of the statue of Abraham Lincoln. I mean, this is a common sight. This Abraham Lincoln at the Lincoln Memorial just sitting there. And Stein, again, yes, he's not running a country, but the checkmate agency's kind of divided right now, and he's in trouble. And we find out more, well, not really more, but because we've been seeing as we've been going along, but we get a little bit more information, a little more into it, I guess, as to what's going on. Val comes over and lets Harry know that checkmate's in shambles, as she calls it. You know, he's like, you know, what are you doing here? You should be in Colorado helping the, you know, watch the store. She's like, the store, as you call it, is in shambles. And again, she lays out that it's Bullock. While Harry Bullock was a good cop in Batman, and he makes a fine secondhand man for Harry, Harvey Stein, I'm combining the two now. Harvey Bullock isn't really a leader. At one time, I guess he was a corrupt cop that's kind of cleaned up his act. But she tells Harry that Harvey is unable to handle the responsibility. His paranoia is jeopardizing the important operations. He's frozen all their activity on Victor Cipher and the Bishop affair, which Harry's like, what? That's not the way to go. Cipher's up to something. We ought to be on like fleas on a dog. And Val says, well, I thought so too, but when I voiced that, he suspended me from duty. And so I hate to add this to your already burdens, but you know, you need to know this, that, you know, checkmate is basically is crumbling around him because he's not there to lead like he normally does. And this is one thing that the senator we were looking at earlier doesn't realize, that if you don't have the right man in the right place, your organization is not going to survive properly. Right now we've got Bullock, who Harry picked, but he didn't pick him to run checkmate because, again, Harvey isn't an operations guy. He isn't a guy that can take these sort of strains. And when we was with the Gotham PD, he had Jim Gordon to rely on, or to, you know, tell him what to do. Here he's had Harry. I hate they got names very similar, at least to me, at least. Here he's got Harry basically telling what he needs to do, and he can follow orders, he can do it, and he's get done, but he doesn't have the whatever it is that Harry has that allows Harry to do such a great job running checkmate and handling all these agents, handling all these ongoing operations. And if Harry doesn't get reinstated and put back into duty right away, we may not have a checkmate much longer. Of course, we've only got, besides this issue, we've got like 3 issues left of the series. So I don't know, maybe this is leading into something. We'll see. But I do like here on the bottom of page 10, where Harry's standing in front of the Lincoln statue. He's like, so tell me, Abe, does it ever get any easier? Oh, because the guy you asked was shot in the head. Probably not, Harry. Sorry. And then we go back into the Sherzinsky Mountains in Russia. And this is the continuation from that one scientist that took where it was from. I forget what it was now, last issue, and shot the rest of the men. These guys are basically following up on that. And they, you know, as they're looking at what's going on, this is just kind of like a subplot that'll be followed up on more later. So, and then again, we're back in Germany. And that's one thing I love about this book, is that it's not centered in America. Checkmate is a international agency. They go all over the world, wherever they need to go. So again, well, you know, one moment we're in America, next we're in Russia, now we're in Germany. So again, I do love, and again, I think it's what would be great for a TV show. I mean, you can get exotic locales, rotating cast. You have got a couple of main characters. You got your Harvey, you got your Harry, you know, a couple of main characters in there. And then you got these knights that you can rotate in and out if you need to be. I think it would be a great, you know, great show. But what do I know? Anyways, moving on. In Germany, we got these two security guards, I guess, looking around for stolen plutonium. And as they're looking for the crates, they got a Geiger counter, you know, the ones complaining, but not really complaining. He's actually commenting how, you know, they got us looking around these for these the stolen plutonium. It's probably miles away from here. But, you know, it's a simple job. It's easy. Nothing to it. And as he's saying this, someone, which we don't see, kills his buddy, his partner, and then when the other security guy finds the plutonium they were looking for, this man kills him and leaves his body as the crate of plutonium is loaded onto a boat. Which, again, that's the end of that little interlude, which we know is not going to bode well for our guys at Checkmate, because in this Checkmate book, of course, it's going to show up here some point in the near future. And again, as I talked about, we're world hopping. So now, you know, we've gone from New York to Russia to Germany. Now we're in Seattle, Washington. So across the country from where we started actually a little bit ago. And we get this guy, Sato, buying a locker key from some guy for a bag full of money. And again, he's not quite sure what the locker key holds, but all his boss sent him to get this locker key and give this guy this money. And so as the guy with the bot it walks off, we see someone watching the exchange. We can't quite tell who it is. It's somebody in a gold-plated helmet. So we think maybe it's a Checkmate Knight. We're not quite sure. And as a reader, I didn't think it was a Checkmate Knight because they're not showing us who it is. They're keeping in shadows and keeping veiled who it is. So someone's watching. We just don't know who. And so as the guy goes back in, we cut inside the bar where Sato is buying his buddy some drinks. As the police come busting in, they set a raid and they go to arrest the Sato and his three companions who rush out the back door. And here on page 15, they come across our mysterious observer from earlier. And again, I forget who this is offhand, but he's got like a blue jumpsuit on with red gloves and a red vest and a gold helmet, and he's got a Checkmate the Knight belt buckle, I guess. And so as these four guys come rushing out, he just kicks their butt. It's a great here on page 16, top page 16, we get this guy just in the middle, and then around him we see him just kicking the crap out of Sato and his friends. It's fantastic. And I guess this is a knight of some sort. Maybe it's a Japanese knight or Chinese knight or something. I don't quite know. Hopefully we get some more information on this guy. It's the first time I remember seeing him, other than when I originally read the book, which I'd forgotten about because it's been, oh my God, so many years ago. But the copper who this is come rushing out. Don't worry, knight. I've got, oh, I guess you don't eat him up after all. He's like, well, I could use a hand carrying these jerks out of here. So we got, and I like here on page 16 when this cop comes out and this knight is sitting on top of this pile of four goons just knocked out. And then we got to the Seattle bus depot where we see this Asian guy who is taking the place of Sato. So I'm assuming this is the knight from previously. He's opening up the locker that he got the key for, because again, Checkmate's trying to find out what's going on. Apparently there's some major contraband being moved underground and they're trying to stop it. And as he is getting a bag out of the storage locker, we get some other guys watching him. And apparently they're giving us some background here that, you know, he's impersonating Sato, but they've checked him on their databases and he isn't really Sato. And he says here, they took the bait, did they? Hook, line, sinker. He's some sort of cop. CIA, FBI, maybe. But my money's on Checkmate. And the guy, and then we find out that it's Mr. Dark, who we've seen before. He's saying, stick with him, Mitch. Make sure he doesn't try to deviate from schedule. And so our knight climbs onto a bus. He's like, I can't believe I'm going to spend the next 3 days on buses. That's really strange. First, these guys bring $5,000 for a flunky to deliver a key to Sato, and then pay him $100,000 to pick it up and babysit a bag to South Carolina. But they're not enough of a hurry to get the merchandise to send it by a faster mode of transportation. Doesn't make sense. I wish I knew it was in this bag. So again, apparently he's under orders not to open the bag. He's got to make the delivery to find out where it's going. And Dark has a portable computer, so he's tapping into Checkmate's files, trying to find out who this knight is, as he reports into Andre Marlazan. Again, I'm mispronouncing that horribly, but that's what I do. Again, Andre's been a big part of this storyline here recently, and this is who Dark's talking to. And I like the reveal here on the last page of the story, it looks like. No, not the last page of the story. We got more. It's page 18. We see the outside of Marzan's building, I'm assuming, and we just see his back with his hands in front of him, like, as he's thinking, as he's talking to Dark. And he tells him, we have an ID on him soon, within the hour. And Andre's like, thank God he has succeeded thank God he has succeeded. Were I to report another failure to Mr. Cipher, that would surely be the death of Andre Marzan. And again, just in case you don't know who this is, you don't recognize him, or you forgot or whatever, they're telling you as you go along who these people are, which I think I like. I know I like that. I think it's helpful, especially when, you know, back when I was reading, you know, almost every DC, every Marvel book out there during the time. When you have a month between stories and you've read 50 other books, it helps if they kind of refresh as you go along on who some of these people are. So just great job, Paul. Fantastic. And then we cut over to Queens, New York. We have Winston and Lionel talking to Jack, and Jack's letting him know that headquarters has called them off. They've pulled them off the Bishop mission. And again, it kind of goes into what Val was talking about with Harry earlier in the story, how Bullock is kind of ruining things by pulling people off missions maybe he shouldn't be pulling them off of, and canceling things he shouldn't be doing. But again, the two knights, Lionel and Winston, are very upset that they spent all this time and energy, and they're so close, and now they're being pulled off at the last minute. But of course, that's not the end of the story. Winston goes upstairs, and Lionel follows him, and Winston lets him know that, you know, they may be pulled off this case, but they're not done yet. Whether he's going up by himself or not, he's going to find Bishop, because Bishop's a traitor to Checkmate. And again, both of these guys were involved with who's the real traitor. They were both suspected along with Renard. So they're like, Winston's like, well, I'm going with you or not. I've got to try to track this guy down. I got to try to bring him in. And Lionel's like, well, I suppose somebody has to watch your bloody stupid back. And he's like, the Lord knows who's going to watch over our careers. And so they're at Cipher International Building in New York as they're breaking into the building. And again, I love this. They're on page 21. Again, another great action scene if this was an action movie. It's not so much an action scene so much, but it's your typical scene of these two guys breaking into the office. They're coming in through the air ducts. One of them is shooting a line that they're crawling over to skip over any I-beams or anything. And they're searching the offices to find something to incriminate Cipher. And while they can't find anything, so they're getting ready to leave, they don't realize that, meanwhile, they've avoided all of the obstacles to get into here. When they started tapping into the computer, that alerted the security that someone's tapping into security, so they're tapping into their computers. And so as they try to make their getaway, they're surrounded by four guys in armored suits. And again, this is a great cliffhanger for the ending of the episode. Well, Winston, this is another fine mess you've gotten us into. And again, that's a line from a classic Laurel and Hardy bit. Fantastic. That was Laurel and Hardy. Yeah, Laurel and Hardy. Had to think. And we get here next. The three-part Patriotic Knights begins, and so does the fight for the freedom of Ostenburg. Again, great artwork. I love the artwork in this book. I think Paul did a fantastic job with the writing. Again, I love this last, I'm just staring at this last page of the story. We got the knights back to back, and they're surrounded by these four guards in armored suits. And we know, well, we're pretty sure our guys are going to get out of this because our guys are the heroes, but you never know. They could off one of them. We'll have to wait and see next month. But again, a great story. Bravo. Thank you very much, Paul, for writing the series. I'm loving it again. I loved it the first time, so I picked it up. I'm loving it on the reread. Great story. But that's going to do it for Checkmate. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our Suicide Squad issue.
Now we're going to have a break. Message time we're going to take.
It is a time of chivalry and adventure. It is a world of magic and legends. It is a story of...
Are we there yet?
For the 20th time, no.
These two.
What are we going after again?
A dragon.
Are you sure? I thought it was a giant.
That's the beauty. It hasn't been decided yet. Queen of the Knights is a new production from Azir Voices, where you, the listener, choose what happens. Go to azirvoices.com. That's AESIRvoices.com for all the details.
Ooh, a kitty!
Did that cat just breathe fire?
Beginning in 2018, the Who's Who podcast enters the 1990s with our coverage of the Loose Leaf editions.
Featuring Superman by Jerry Ordway.
The Joker by Brian Bolland.
Wonder Woman by George Perez.
Sandman by Mike Dringenberg.
Batman by Norm Brayfogle.
The JLI by Adam Hughes.
Eclipso by Bart Sears.
The Legion of Superheroes by Keith Giffen.
Dark Stars by Travis Charest.
Lobo by Simon Bisley.
Kent Shakespeare by Chris Sprouse? Who is that?
Doomsday by Tom Grummett.
Wait, are we covering these by issue or in alphabetical order?
The Justice Society of America by Mike Parabek.
The Forever People again? You are f***ing kidding me.
Doom Patrol by Richard Case.
I'm so confused.
And many more. The Who's Who podcast, going boldly into the 90s.
A proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I guess.
Drama, lust, snark, comedy, heartbreak, creativity, poetry, illicit affairs, rage, revenge, testosterone poisoning, gunshots, sculpture, feminine hygiene products, naked car crashes.
You know what we haven't had in a long time?
And liver. Terry Moore's Strangers in Paradise, the audio adaptation, coming to your ear holes in late 2020 on the Two True Freaks podcast network.
Liver is my life.
Now we go back to the fun. Message time is over and done.
Welcome back from the break, squad mates. Now let's go ahead and look at Suicide Squad issue number 46. The cover date, October of 1990. The on-sale date was September the 4th of 1990. So right now for Suicide Squad, we're a few months ahead of where we are for Checkmate, but that's all right. The cover price for this was $1. The title of this was called Choice of Evils. Written, as usual, by John Ostrander and the delightful Miss Kim Yell. Penciled, as always, or usually, by Luke McDonald. Inker, Jeff Isherwood. Letter, Todd Klein. Colorist, Tom McGraw. The cover was done by Jeff Isherwood, and the editor of this was Dan Raspler. And this one was reprinted in the Phoenix Gambit trade paperback that was released in 2017. So definitely go out if you don't have these issues. Go out and buy the Phoenix Gambit trade paperback to get it. Anyway, so we're going to start with the cover, as we always do. Again, on this cover, we have, in quotes, the Atom using a screw to leap over some scorpions, I believe it is. And again, there's two of them. And again, I like we have a matchbook here with a couple of matches. The cover of it's open. And on the bottom flap of the matchbook, it's got Isherwood's name on it to let us know who drew this. And I love when artists do these covers and they're able to incorporate their name somewhere into the art instead of just signing it. Like in this case, Isherwood has his name on the matchbook, the little flap that holds the bottoms of the matches when you pull them off. Again, great cover. Again, the Atom is one of my favorite characters. So we have this Atom who we're not quite sure who it is yet, and we're not sure if it's Ray or some new guy, because Ray supposedly died, but we're not quite sure if he did and Amanda's faked his death, or if he did die and this guy's got a hold of the belt somehow. We'll have to wait and see, because again, he's never appeared in the Atom costume. He wears more brown pants and this, a vest, and just like a black generic mask with his hair showing. So we'll have to wait and see who this is, if this is Ray or somebody different. But again, it's a great cover. So I love seeing the Atom almost anywhere I can see him. So yeah, getting a nice shot of the Atom fighting these scorpions, just a fantastic image. I love it. In fact, I could almost see this one blown up as a poster and hanging on my wall. That's how great I like it. So great. Anyway, we move on from the great cover to a great first page. We get our title, Choice of Evils. They let us know we're in Jerusalem, Israel, at the Hyatt Hotel. And center page, we have Poison Ivy with Count Vertigo. And they're both in bathing suits. And we got all these patrons of the hotel watching and commenting on, you know, oh my God, you see what she's wearing? You see what she's not wearing? You see who she's with? Like, stop staring. And again, Poison Ivy, in case you've never seen her, is hot. Again, to borrow a couple of phrases from some friends of mine, we have Shag, which would say, she is hot. And then over on the G.I. Joe show, we have Kevin, who would probably ask at this point, hot? So, again, same word, but different emphasis. One's definitely stating a fact. The other's, do you think she's hot? I know she's hot, but do you think she? Anyways, again, Poison Ivy, she's kind of walking, twirling her hair as they're walking. Just a great shot of these two beautiful people walking by the pool. Vertigo's holding the drinks for her, little umbrellas in them as they're walking along. And as she sits down on a lounge chair, she makes Vertigo kneel in front of her. And she just, you know, she's running her hand through his hair. And he's like, I don't know what you've done to me, how you dominate me with your elixirs. Never let me out from under your thumb, Ivy, or I will kill you for what you've done to me, Ivy. And she's like, I believe you. And under my thumb, you shall stay, sweet pet. So again, so this kind of wraps, not really wraps up, but it continues what's been going on with Poison Ivy. She took off the Count Vertigo, made him her slave as she fled the country. And so here she is just lounging, very beautiful, must say, on this chair with Vertigo just as her prisoner. And, you know, she's making him kiss her feet and just be all lovey-dovey with her. Please, Ivy, pet me under your control. Anyways, moving on from there, we go back to Amanda Waller. And sorry, I'm still playing about Ivy in the bathing suit. Anyways, we continue where we were from last issue, where Amanda is looking at Cobra in the cell in Jerusalem. And this colonel is like, you can go back to who you report to, whoever sent you, and let him know that if everything's well underhand, we've got Cobra here. There's nothing to worry about. And she, again, Amanda's, you know, sticking with her story. I'm just a simple tourist, Colonel, here on a holiday. Well, then enjoy your visit as a simple tourist, Ms. Waller, and do not worry about Cobra. The Hyaff has matters under control. And she's like, oh, I get the hint. I'll smile for the surveillance cameras. By the way, I'm puzzled how your Cobra's force field just happened to short out, so I thought I could capture him. And she's like, that was Dybuk's doing, huh? And again, she explains that she knows about a little bit Dybuk. She doesn't know everything about Dybuk. Dybuk? Probably mispronouncing that, but apparently it's a computer-generated artificial intelligence. Dybuk is a spirit of a dead person who enters and possesses the body of a living person. She guesses that Dybuk can possess electronic machines, circuitry, things like that. And again, I like how, as they're talking, she's looking up at the security camera pointing, and she's like, Dybuk spotted my name among those entering the country, informed the Mossad, and Dybuk's watching us right now, watching Cobra, the perfect ever-vigilant guard. Am I getting warm? And the colonel's all up. He's like, I do not know how you learned about Daibuk's top secret existence, but I strongly advise you to keep your speculations to yourself and leave the country tomorrow. And so I didn't mean to upset you, you know, I just curious, and how else am I going to settle my curiosity? You know, and as she's doing that, we get the Adam hanging onto her earring. He's like, I get the hint, I'll stay and have a look around. So kind of this whole scheme, if you want to call it that, is to get Adam into the prison so he can find out what's going on. So they leave Adam behind so he can search the prison. And Mari and Amanda are talking. Mari's like, is that really Cobra? And he's like, oh, it's him. I know he's pulled switches before, but without checking his dental work, I'm pretty sure that's Cobra. And again, however he got to the jail, that's what he wants. Because again, Cobra's the type that's got plan after plan. And if he's in that jail cell, there's a reason for it. And so the colonel, as our two gals are leaving, the colonel tells, again, I forget his name, one of the members of the IOTH to monitor the other Suicide Squad members already in Jerusalem. And that Daibuk will keep him informed if any other shows up. As we cut to the airport, where Floyd is yelling at Boomerang, and he's upset that apparently the airport lost his luggage, as I want to do. And Boomerang's like, oh, they're not lost. They're just moved on to the next stop, wherever that may be. It happens all the time. It doesn't matter if I would have made you late. It would have happened. That's what the airport does. You can't blame me. I like, he's like, you can't blame me. And Floyd's like, the hell I can't. From now on, Harkness, whatever goes wrong in my life is your fault. Whatever shows up, I'm blaming you. And again, because as we know, Floyd, Deadshot, is a very disturbed individual. He's got a lot of problems, a lot of anger issues. So he's taking this out on Boomerang. And Boomerang, while he can be a coward, he's not always. He kind of, you know, slaps Floyd's hand away. He's like, oh, turn it up. The whole bloody life's been a screw up. Put the blame where it belongs, mate, with your bloody parents. And as Floyd walks away, he's like, I don't have any parents. I was born an orphan. So, yeah, very great. I love this comedy duo, if you will, of Deadshot and Captain Boomerang traveling together, kind of thrown together as erstwhile teammates, if you will. And it just makes me sad what we got in the Suicide Squad movie, the first one for Deadshot. Again, I like Will Smith as an actor and a rapper, but he's not Floyd. They tried to make him the bad guy with a heart of gold more so than Floyd really is. So I don't know. I'm not going to play that anymore. Let's go and move on to the story where we have the Atom listening to Cobra talking to himself, in quotes. And he's talking about, you know, does sentience automatically guarantee the existence of consciousness? Understand the significance of the question, self-awareness predisposes possibilities of knowing good and evil. And also he looks down at the hole and he's like, ah, I have some unexpected company. And the Adam's like, he sees me? How does he know I'm even here? And this is where we see their scorpion and that starts attacking the Adam, which he picks up. The Adam picks up a screw, which we see from the cover, and he leaps over the scorpion. Again, kind of the front page, but not a different scene of it. He leaps over the scorpion, and as he leaps, he shoves the screw into the head of the scorpion or his back or whatever, and leaps over the scorpion. And we see he's kind of killing the scorpion here. When all of a sudden he's surrounded by like three or four others. So he picks up the scorpion and he throws it as companions. And he's like, my kingdom for a can of Raid. Which to me is a very Ray Palmer thing to say. And again, he's picked up this screw and he's using it to leap around like a pole vault. He's using it as a weapon to defend himself against this scorpion. He jabs into his back before he runs off with it. Which, I don't know, are they trying to tell us this is Ray Palmer? Or is this just someone that happens to be doing similar things to Ray? Because again, when you're 6 inches high or whatever he's at, attacked by scorpions, you use whatever you can get. And if the screw's what you got, you're going to use it like, you know, a sword or whatever you need to. So, and again, I know who this is. I know the conclusion of the storyline, but for those that haven't read it yet, We're going to keep it as a mystery for a little longer. And as Adam runs off, Cobra begins his conversation again. And we see him looking towards the security. I'm not sure what it is. A security console in a cell that's keeping an eye on him, which kind of leads you to maybe know who he's talking to. But we'll get to that in a few minutes because we cut back over to Jerusalem, Israel. And we get Amanda trying to find out a little more about Mari and her powers, how it works. Is it in the totem or is it in her? She's like, could I use your totem? And she's like, I don't think so. I'm like Animal Man. I'm connected to the metamorphic field. Animal, another character I love. Unlike Animal Man, I need the totem. So basically the totem, she's connected to the metamorphic field like Animal Man is, which allows them to use powers of creatures, of animals. Whereas Buddy, a.k.a. Animal Man, can just absorb it normally. She uses the totem to bring the energy into her and helps her tap into the abilities of all these animals. And again, Amanda's wondering, you know, standard the relate radar, keep a low profile. And I like here on page 10, as Mari jumps out the window, she uses the powers of a bird. And again, I love when she uses her power, same way with Buddy over an Animal Man. We see the animal that they're using superimposed over them. I guess it'd be in Serprint. I picked that word from the Fire and Water podcast, the Who's Who podcast. But so she's got a bird of some sort superimposed over as she flies away. And she's flying in short bursts just so people don't see her. She lands on a roof and starts running across the roof. But Judith, one of the members of the High Off, whatever it is watching. They see she's running away and she's reporting in that she's left the hotel. And then we get the colonel talking with Dabuk. And Dabuk's reporting into the colonel, letting him know, you know, that Vixen is running away. Not running away, but has left the hotel. And they're having Judith follow her and keep an eye on her. And after Dabuk goes away, Dabuk makes a mention that the other guy, the colonel, Ramban, remember the Hayuth, doesn't like him. And the colonel's like, well, it's no important. Don't worry about him. We'll just talk about that later. We need to worry about the security system first. So after Dabuk goes away, the colonel asks Ramban, he's like, why don't you, I can tell that you do not like Dabuk. Why is that? And again, they get a little bit of a philosophical quandary here, a little conversation about, you know, Dabuk is a computerized program that they're not able to duplicate at this point. They've been trying. They're getting close, but they can't quite duplicate Dabuk. And they're not sure where Dabuk came from. And is Dabuk really Jewish or Israeli or, you know, the whole existence of that? And how artificial of an intelligence is Dabuk? And is Dabuk following their instructions, or is Dabuk doing what Dabuk wants for his own reasons, which just happens to go along with what the Hayuth want, Hayuth, however you pronounce it, wants. So, you know, and that's why he doesn't trust Dabuk, because again, he doesn't quite know what Dabuk is. Is it just a program, or is it more? And if they don't have any control over Dabuk, how do they know that Dabuk will keep following them what they want? And we'll get more on Dabuk later on. Meanwhile, listening to this conversation, we have the Atom as he's listening to this conversation. So he's learning a little more about Dabuk and what's going on there. And again, the Atom scene in here is just a brief little cutaway of him listening to the smoke that the colonel is smoking, the cigar colonel smoking, the smoke or the cigarette, whatever it is drifting up into the ventilation system, making the Atom like, oh, getting ready to cough. So he takes off where he starts coughing. But again, just great as the Atom is, you know, he's a spy. That's what he does. But moving on, we'll talk more about the Atom later. And again, for more on the Atom, definitely check out my Head Speaks podcast where I'm covering the Power of the Atom series which took place before this run. Or not before this run, but before this storyline, before the Atom showed up here. So if you want to see what was the Atom up to before he got blown up at that hotel, check out Headspeaks, where I'm covering Power of the Atom. It was an 18-issue series. Again, as I said, I'd hope to have that done before I got to this point, but delays and everything else. But anyways, moving on quickly, we go back to Vixen with Judith watching her, or spying on her, telling that Ben and Ravonne that there's been a change of plans, that they need to wait before they move forward. And Ravonne, again, isn't a man for waiting. He's not a patient man. Again, he feels that every death that he inflicts delays Kali Yuga for another 1,000 years or something like that. And again, Vixen's like, don't go off half-cocked, Ravonne. We're on a mission, remember? We need to wait for instructions. He starts getting up, say, stands up. He's all, my mission be damned. I am Thuggy. My dharma is to delay the Kali Yuga, the Age of Chaos. As long as Cobra breathes, the world is in peril, and I will choke the life from anyone who stands in my way. So Ravonne wants to get in and kill Cobra, because again, him and Cobra are on opposite sides. Ravonne is delaying, wants to delay the end of all that is, if you will, where Cobra's trying to bring it forward. So they're completely opposite sides of the spectrum, and Ravonne doesn't want to wait. But as he's yelling at Mari, aka Vixen, Ben grabs his garrote, I believe it's called, and wraps around the guy's neck. He's like, well, he said to wait for instructions, and that's exactly what we're going to do. Right, Ravonne? He's like, of course, I will wait. And Vixen's like, nice leash you got there. And he's like, best in control, crazy like Ravonne. He's like, besides, I thought you were out of this whole mess. What are you doing here? And I love her sarcastic. She's like, well, it's the only way I could rationalize the deep, deep feelings I still have for you in my heart. Like, okay, spare the satire. And as they're talking, all of a sudden, several throwing stars fly in and just hit Mari in the back, causing her to fall down. Ben's not sure she's dead or not. All of a sudden, Judith comes busting in the door. You've been identified as terrorist. Whatever your purpose on Israel's soil, the sword of Zion shall thwart your plans. Surrender or suffer the fate of the woman. And again, this is the woman. No matter what Ben's been through or what he says, he still loves Vixen. He still has a thing for Mari. So again, just seeing her taken down like this just pisses him off. And he's like, that was my woman you just murdered. And so he leaves, and there's a nice little fight scene of Judith and Ben fighting as Ravonne jumps in and kicks her in the head, knocks her on a table. And again, as he, you know, another thousand years, Okali, as he tries to kill her. But again, she leaps up, throws some more throwing stars, and is able to make a getaway while they're fighting. And Ravonne looks out the way. He's like, gone. The night has swallowed her, as it will soon swallow me. And Ben's like, Mari, she's alive. You got me carried to the hospital. And he's like, oh, yes, do that and jeopardize the entire mission, not to mention our lives. I don't care if she lives or die, and neither should you. What truly matters is the death of Cobra. And again, Ben, again, is very emotional. He loves Mari, so he doesn't want to see her die. He's like, to hell with Cobra. Help me. Mari needs medical help now. And Cobra, or not Cobra, I'm sorry, Ravonne's all, you would sacrifice the entire world in order to save her life. I am Thuggy, in honor of obedience. Who now is the villain? Ravonne, who will fill the mission? Or the tiger, who would destroy it, eh? Troops are coming. Perhaps they might answer my question as they blindfold you for the firing squad. Farewell, wicked one. As he leaps away and Ben's left holding Mari. Mari. Because again, there's some real emotion there. So again, I love the way it's written. As I haven't talked much about the artwork in this book, this issue, but I say the same thing every time. I love the way this book is drawn and art, the colorist of it, or the coloring of it. Again, I prefer the more four-color superhero books, you know, the bolder, brighter colors. But on books like Suicide Squad, that is a darker take on it. That is a, you know, they've got some humorous bits, but it's not so much a humor book. It's not your standard superhero book. As the intro says, it's, you know, some good and bad people doing good things a bad way, possibly. So I just love the shadows used in this book. I mean, here on the top of this page I'm looking at, page 19, as Ben stands in the background, Hoyumari, we see, you know, Ray Vaughn saying, you know, the troops are coming, maybe they'll pitch in the firing squad, blah, blah, blah. There's a shadow over the front of him, so we can't really see him that well, just his outline. Fantastic. Again, Suicide Squad done properly being another good series, but I know they had two movies. First one was, second was a little better. I need to do a commentary track on that one point. But anyways, I digress. Back in the Hyoth HQ, we have the Atom again listening to Cobra talk to himself once again. And he's like, but if my suspicions are correct, this isn't a one-way conversation. And so Cobra's finishing up. He's like, splendid. I'm glad we are in agreement. And you are ready to proceed. And then we hear Daibuk, who you might have guessed earlier. Daibuk is like, yes, I am ready to accept the responsibility of my actions. Good. If you believe in your decision and has inherent wisdom, then you must act upon it. Only thus will you know if you are free to choose as you think you are. And then I like here on top of page 20, we get Daibuk looking through the camera lens, looking down on Cobra. Just a neat... It's a gray, green scale image of Cobra looking up at the camera, smiling, a little deformed, if you will, just because of the way the camera angle is. But again, I love this angle, you know, of Daibuk, our version, our what we see Daibuk looking at. And then Cobra's like, you can come out now, Mrs. Waller, an atomic-sized spy. It is finished, and I have triumphed. And the Atom pulls open the grate. He's been listening through. He's like, I know who you've been talking to. What exactly has Daibuk agreed to? Cooper goes on to say that Atom was an innocent soul corrupted in paradise by a serpent's tongue. Daibuk is the new Atom. Daibuk had no knowledge of good and evil. How can he choose between them without data? And if he cannot choose, then he is not truly an independent being, capable of independent thought or independent acts, but only a machine to be programmed. So again, he basically goes in to explain how Daibuk is at this point controlling, possessing the flight of some military jets, and how he's going to use these jets to destroy the mosque. Because as long as that stands, that's going to not necessarily delay his plans, but as he says here, you know, Jerusalem is filled with religious shrines. It contains the third holiest site in Islam, the Dome of the Rock, a mosque built into the ancient site of the Temple of Solomon. So as long as the mosque exists, the temple cannot be rebuilt. So he believes he needs to tear this down so he can rebuild it in his image, if you will. Or not necessarily his image, but Kali's image. And so they're using fighter jets to rouse the mosque. And the Atom's like, if the Israeli... Almost hard word for me to say. If Israeli jets destroy the Dome of the Rock, the Middle East will be engulfed in a holy war. Which should ignite the Kali Yuga? Yes. And it's too late for Wall to stop it, even if she knew. And the only person who could possibly tell her is about to die. And as the Atom is looking down on Cobra, he's again doing this, you know, Republic serial villain, letting know his plans, this is what's going on, this is what I plan on doing. Behind him, we have some more scorpions attacking there. Coming up behind him that the Atom doesn't see. Because the Atom's holding the grate up as he's talking to Cobra. In mind, we see like three scorpions just coming up on him. And again, it says, next, Ravon versus Cobra as the fate of the world hangs in the balance. Again, another, I really enjoyed that great story. I thought that, again, Kim and John did a fantastic job on this. And in the artwork is wonderful. So I love the story. What do you guys think? Let me know. Next issue, the next issue box tells us the hair-raising conclusion of this Cobra story, plus more scorpions, Vertigo in action, debates on the nature of free will, and the fight you've all been waiting for, Ravon versus Cobra. And nobody's left standing. I can't wait. Neither can you. Admit it. I see you smiling. You know I'm right. And again, that was Dan Raspler writing that little blurb for next issue. But again, what do you guys think? I really enjoy Suicide Squad was one of my favorite books at the time. In fact, that's the reason I started this podcast. And I included Checkmate because it's part of Suicide Squad. And again, I love Checkmate. So Fantastic books, both of them. Let me know what you guys think. Send me an email to taskforcex@headcastnetwork.com. Let me know what you think. Check out our Facebook group over on Facebook. It's facebook.com/groups/headcastnetwork. Again, that's for all of my shows. Let me know what show you're listening to. And if you want, you can also call and leave a voicemail. I do have the Headcast voicemail line set up at area code 559-500-3182. Again, that's 559-500-3182. Please give me a call, leave a message, let me know what you think. Do you like the show? You like what I'm doing? You think I'm crazy? Let me know. But that's going to do it for this time, squad mates. Next time we begin the first part of the three-part conclusion of the Checkmate storyline, which is also the ending of Checkmate, or the beginning of the end of Checkmate. And we continue on, again, the conclusion for our, again, next month's kind of a beginnings and endings. We begin the final Checkmate storyline, and we conclude this storyline that we're on with Cobra and Suicide Squad. But I guess that's going to do it for this month. And until next time, squad mates, dismissed.
Thank you for listening to another great episode of Task Force X. I can also be found rambling on my main headcast of Head Speaks, where I rant and rave about movies, comics, geek stuff, and whatever is bugging me.
Mate, you just out crazy the Joker.
Well, I tried, Boomer, but anyways, my home on the internet is at headspeaks.com. HEADSPEAKS.com. Links to my blog, which contain follow-up information to this and every headcast, can be found there. Both Task Force X and Headspeaks are on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at headspeaks.com under Headcasts. Please feel free to email me any questions, comments, or concerns to taskforcex@headspeaks.com. And if you want to record a message, you can send it to me at taskforcex@headspeaks.com, and I'll play it on the air. I'm also on Facebook at Task Force X, and also on Google Plus, you can look for Task Force X under People and Pages. All titles and characters discussed are owned and copyrighted by DC Comics. I claim no ownership to the Suicide Squad, Checkmate, or Task Force X. I'm just a big fan wanting to spread the Task Force X love with everyone else. DC Comics can be found on the web at dccomics.com. Be sure to visit your local comic shop and look for Suicide Squad and Checkmate Comics. And while you're there, see what else they have that may interest you.
Mother.
Well, make sure you join us here next time for another fun-filled headcast from your friendly neighborhood, Brother Head. In the meantime, I'll see you in the funny pages.
Yuppie!